So hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Deep Dive with me, Stephen. Now, it's been said that teaching is the only profession where you steal hours from your own life to build someone else's future. What do you think? It's true. Teachers not only teach, they're expected to counsel, to guide, to lead, and even to befriend their students. Here in Singapore, the OECD, that's the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, they found that teachers in Singapore clock over 47 hours a week. And that's well above the global average of 41 hours. So why is that the case? And what can be done about it? Singapore's Ministry of Education has rolled out some measures from, you know, setting clearer boundaries on teacher-parent communication, implementing AI tools to help with the marking, the paperwork, but is that really enough? How do we make teaching not just a calling, but a sustainable and attractive career? So for today's discussion, I'm joined by Associate Professor Jason Tan, who focuses on policy, curriculum, and leadership at the National Institute of Education.
Hello, everyone.
And a former teacher, Heidi Tan.
Hello, everyone.
Okay, welcome, guys. Heidi, I'm going to start with you because you were a former teacher. We were just talking about the long hours, you know, over 47 hours a week. And we know a lot of it often involves duties outside the classroom, like taking part in CCA and learning journeys. So give us a sense of what it's really like from teachers, or for teachers rather. And from your point of view, how accurate is the description we just mentioned about the long hours and things like that?
I would say it's very accurate.
Okay.
So one thing that I would like to make mention is that it's a very common saying among teachers that our job scope is like 30% teaching and then 70% other things.
Wow.
Yeah. So it sounds very off balance, right?
Yeah. What are all these other things?
Yeah. It could be a slight exaggeration, but then, to be honest, there's a lot of invisible workload that people don't see. So, for example, like, after I step out of the classroom, there could be things that I have to manage because they happen in the classroom. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, maybe two kids got into a very minor scuffle but I need to follow up, I need to speak to them, I need to, you know, find out what happened, and all those would be taken from like my free time, which is supposed to be perhaps for me to prepare for the next lesson. So then it snowballs because I lost that time. Besides that, we do a lot of like event planning as well.
I mean, I've heard stories of teachers having to like, I don't know, cut patterns for some Chinese New Year celebration or something like that.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. So where do you think those decorations come from for like stage decor or like the balloons and all that? So there could be afternoons where like, you know, we stay back and then together we teamwork makes the dream work. So then we all blow balloons together. But yeah, but that's not really like, you know, directly like relevant to my job, I would say. Okay. Those are those like invisible workloads. So on top of that, then there's also like planning for learning journeys, chasing down the consent forms, doing up the risk assessment forms for the learning journey, etc. Okay. Yeah, all those are borne by teachers actually.
And did you also have to spend time speaking directly to parents about, for whatever reason or different issues?
So like, for example, that scuffle example that I gave, so then that would also be followed up by like a phone call to the parents, and then maybe filling up some forms to notify the year head of what has happened, documentation, etc. So like one little scuffle in class can translate to like another hour of like work just on that.
But before we go further, one would argue that some of these things are part of a teacher's responsibility, you know, the teaching, the caring for the students, looking out for them. So if you had to break it down, would you say, earlier you said 30-70, 30% teaching, 70% other things. If you count all the other things which are relevant to a teacher, would you say it's about 50-50 or still 30-70?
I guess if you put it that way, perhaps 50-50, but yeah, like I said, it was like a little bit of exaggeration there, but it also just means that as a teacher, I think what we really value is that we really want to put our time into planning like great and interactive lessons for the students. But a lot of time, like we find that we don't have the luxury of time to do that. Yeah. Okay. In fact, like if I want to plan like a really engaging lesson for my students, which may involve like tactile resources for them to like use so that they will enjoy the lesson so much, it means that I have to be the one cutting and laminating and creating these resources which will take time. And okay. sometimes I just don't have the time to do that. And so I think when teachers say that, oh, like I do 30% of my time is teaching, 70% of the time is other things, that's what they are really trying to like talk about. Like I right. would really rather spend my time doing like actual thing that translates okay. to my lessons.
Fair enough. So it sounds like the priority for teaching isn't there, because ironically, only 30% of your time is spent on what is meant to be your key role as a teacher.
It can feel like yeah. that, to be honest.
So Jason, I'll ask you that, because what Heidi has just mentioned is a struggle that many teachers have. You know, they want to teach. They want to spend time making the lesson as interesting as possible, but they just can't do it. Why is that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting if we take a look at the Ministry of Education's teacher's vision, which outlines the aspirations and roles of teachers. And you'll see that there's no mention at all about preparing students for academic outcomes okay. or for national exams. It's all about the human aspect of education. So, for example, the teacher's vision talks about teachers leading and inspiring their students to believe in themselves and right. to be the best that they can be. It also talks about teachers giving care to their students so that they can touch their lives. In other words, I think there's this whole, if you like, non-academic component, which I think is being deliberately highlighted by the ministry
right.
To send a very strong signal that apart from doing well in studies, there's a lot more that teachers have to try and do. In other words, the holistic okay. development part.
So in a way, are you saying what Heidi described earlier, that 70% of all those other things actually are part of that bigger plan to provide a more holistic experience for the child?
Yes, it's very deliberate.
Okay, so the fact that she is actually teaching less is very deliberate.
You see, if you think about the word teach in the way that most of us tend to, as in deliberate instruction in a particular subject, then of course you'll tend to think of, oh, classroom teaching.
Okay.
But of course, if you expand the definition to include, say, character development, preparing them well for the future, guiding them to make wise choices in life, then, of course, quite naturally, your work cannot be confined to teaching a particular subject in school.
Right. So in other words, the learning journey where you have to fill out the forms, book the bus and all that kind of stuff is actually part of that experiential learning for the child as well. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And that's where I think part of the difficulty arises for many teachers. Because, for example, if we look at the key word care, it's a very meaningful word and it sounds very noble, of course. But when you get down to the specifics of it, there's always this problem, I suppose, of where the limits of your care are. So how much do you need to do in order to show that care? Okay.
Yeah. So Heidi, you've heard what Jason has to say. How would you respond to that?
Well, I totally agree that learning journeys are great for their learning. Of course, experiential learning outdoors is great, right? Why can't I get somebody else to do the planning and then I just bring the students? That would really help me, isn't it?
And can you not get someone else to do that?
I do not know who I can, but there is no dedicated person to do that. So basically, like teachers would be allocated, like for example, if I'm the level rep for this level, then I'll be in charge of the learning journey, which means I am the one that is doing the booking, the coordinating.
So every step, you have to call up the zoo, arrange for 50 tickets, arrange for the school charter bus, everything.
Quotation, how much would it cost, go to the school finance and clear it with the finance, go through a school admin to do the buses, check in with all the classes, like, okay, how many students can make it, how many students are coming, if food is provided, what are the dietary requirements, etc.
Okay, wow.
Right, I can go on.
So, one would ask, in any organization, usually there is a coordinator, someone whose job is just to do that.
Yeah.
So why don't schools have it?
That's a very genuine concern, I think, of teachers. And it's a perennial bugbear. It's not something new at all. Of course, there might very well be a case for having more staff who take on that responsibility mm-hmm. of helping teachers plan these events. Of course, at the same time, I guess teachers come into the picture somehow, inevitably, because of the educative nature of these experiences outside the classroom.
Yeah. But that's different because I can be in charge of the journey, the learning journey, but I should not have to plan every single step along the way, right?
Yes.
That's I can be in charge of what I want the kids to learn from that experience, but do I have to book the buses?
Yes, that's a very legitimate concern that many teachers have. I think it's something for the MOE to really look into very seriously.
Okay, because that just adds additional burden on the teachers to a already heavy workload. And I think, Heidi, you were sharing with my team earlier in the research that you're saying the quality of teachers often depends on the workload. How do we get around that? I mean, because, Jason, the survey found that a lot of teachers are reporting more stress in their workload. A lot of them are unhappy with what they're doing. Is it something to do with the system, or is it got to do with also perhaps the teachers and their mindset coming to this?
I think another, if you like, area of concern is that teachers sometimes feel that they are being treated as service providers instead of as professionals who have that autonomy to make decisions about education. The former education minister, he urged parents to respect teachers more and not to treat them as people who parents can just order around as they like.
How do you feel about that, Heidi? The former education minister did say that, parents should not be calling teachers except for emergencies, After office hours, you should leave the teachers alone and not be saying, oh, is tomorrow, what time should he get to school? Does he have to wear his blue PE t-shirt?
To be fair that to schools, they really did tell parents that the official working hours is from this time to this time. So we are not obliged to reply beyond our working hours. It doesn't stop parents from doing that, to be honest. So sometimes they would still try their luck to ask the night before, what's the spelling for tomorrow, for example. Yeah. And I think some teachers, they still go the extra mile. So they would actually reply to the parents.
And does that then snowball? Because you replied this time, the next time I think, oh, I can just ask you again the night before.
Yeah, it is possible. I mean, at the heart of it, I feel that teachers are really helpful people. Yeah, they really care about the students and they want to just go the extra mile. And they may just feel that just replying one message doesn't cost much of my time, right? But then, as they continue to do that, sometimes it's at the expense of their own family time. Right. And they don't realize it until it becomes it starts feeling like a burden to them.
Did you ever give out your mobile number to parents?
Initially, at the start, when I was still a very young beginning teacher, I did, which after that I regretted. So then when I had the chance to move to another school, I stopped that because it was not sustainable for me. Mm.
So then we asked, is it also on the side of parents and our expectations where we've come to adopt this, customer service model where we almost think like the teacher is a service provider and we can call them anytime.
One of the difficulties that many teachers face is that we're talking about underage students. And that means that a lot of the time, teachers are having to act in loco parentis.
Let's clarify. No, when you say underage, you just mean they're young, they're primary school.
That's right. They're not grown up yet. So that's why the grown-ups play a big part in their lives. Yes. Therefore, the teachers, as the grown-ups, they have that huge responsibility to make decisions about students' welfare, not only their studies, but also their personal safety, relationships among students, whether they are feeling distressed or upset. See, because while they are under your charge, in other words, if you think about it, the parents have entrusted the teachers for those hours during the day. They have taken that leap of faith in entrusting their children's welfare, not only the studies part of it, but also the physical safety, emotional safety, to the teachers in the school. And it's not something trivial at all.
Right.
And you might, of course, say, yes, of course you have to be responsible, but that also means that that responsibility carries a very heavy weight.
Yeah.
Right. So that is the challenge then, because you're right, it is, I am dropping my child off. I trust the school, the teacher will yes. take care of my child.
Yes.
But at the same time, does that mean I can call up anytime, ask about anything? I mean, or do we need to set clear boundaries? Is it because the line doesn't seem to have been drawn very clearly between what you can or cannot do? Does NIE sort of prepare our teachers for that when they're being trained? Or is this something that's left to the school and the principals?
Well, NIE training programs all involve a practicum component, and that's yeah. when the teachers head out to school for a couple of weeks to see how things yeah. are and to get some real-life practice. I think that there's nothing quite like experiencing the workplace firsthand for yourself
yeah.
in
but
order to come to grips.
A few weeks is very different from being there for a few years, you know?
Yes,
in a few
course.
Weeks, you don't really get the full feel of what's happening.
Because you don't get the full weight of the responsibilities of a full-time teacher anyway.
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
Less is expected of you. I think during that practicum period, you have to do a lot of your learning through shadowing more experienced
yeah.
teachers
yeah.
and picking up tips, asking lots of questions, making lots of observations on your own.
But that's more about knowing where the photocopier is and how can I print this to this lesson plan, what should start in what drive for the teachers to share. It doesn't deal with all these other soft issues, which actually are very hard to teach per se, right?
That's why I said a lot of it depends on the trainee working very closely with the mentoring teachers and asking lots of these yeah. questions about what exactly are the roles and responsibilities that the trainee will be expected to assume once they've
right.
completed their training program.
But what I'm asking is that enough? I mean, because an internship and the real job are two very different things. Mm. And when you're in the role and you have that responsibility, then the burden is much greater.
Yes, and that's why I think the schools have this structured mentoring program in place for beginning teachers to ease them in at the start of their careers.
Okay. What do you think, Heidi?
Okay, at this point, I have two questions.
Yeah.
One is that while it is our responsibility to take charge of the kids because parents have dropped them off to us, is it realistic to expect teachers to be responsible for like 38 to 42 kids?
Okay.
And my second question would be, yes, there is the structured mentoring program, but to be very honest, after a while, it became kind of a burden because everyone was struggling to find time to even meet each other during curriculum
right.
hours. Yeah.
As in you're trying to find time to meet and mentor the younger teacher,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, correct.
So we all know that students are the key priority. We want to, as a teacher, you want to do what's best for them, help them learn and grow in the best way you can, and that time is precious, there isn't much of it. So what are the solutions? What can we do? How can we try and avoid this burnout in teachers? I mean, class sizes is something you mentioned.
Yeah.
That we've had that debate before about more students, less students. You've taught in an international school
yes.
as well, Heidi. Were the classes smaller?
Yes, definitely.
Share with us how that was different and whether did you find that better?
I definitely did, which is why smaller class size has always been something that is like on my wish list.
Mm-hmm.
So at the international school, for like maybe like students who need higher support, they will be in like a smaller class size of like up to 14 to 15 students. And a normal class is up to like 25.
Right.
So one teacher managing 25 students versus one teacher managing 38 to 40 students is a great difference.
Mm.
Yeah.
What was the main difference for you? What were you better able to do with a smaller class size?
So with a smaller class size, I definitely, you know, I had like more time to talk to them, to really get to know them better. On top of that, there is usually a teacher assistant to support the teachers in terms of like resource planning, for example. So just like I mentioned, if I want to have a interactive lesson, I would need to create the resources myself, right. Cut and laminate. But I have a teacher assistant to help me.
So she can go do the cutting of the patterns.
Yes, I could like think of like, okay, tomorrow this lesson, I want it to be like this fun. And then I go to her and say, can you help me to do like 5 sets of this? And this is how it should look like, all that. And then, boom, after my next lesson, it's on my desk.
So every teacher has a teacher assistant.
So some programs do have their own teacher assistants, but if not, at least like in a level, there are like 2 teacher assistants who will assist like all the classes.
So in other words, you basically had more manpower to help you do the things that you needed to do to prepare for class. So manpower issues and of course class sizes. Yeah. I mean, there was a time when we were closing schools and people were asking, why are we closing schools? Why not just make class sizes smaller? So what do you say to that, Jason?
I think that if we look at the broad direction that the ministry is now taking, for example, moving towards more individualized learning, encouraging teachers to foster positive teacher-student relationships, and taking care of their social and emotional well-being, then probably the case for smaller class sizes becomes all the more
compelling.
Stronger.
Here's my question, because if money can fix a problem, if we can pay a bit better, hire more teachers, hire more teaching assistants, and if that will really solve so many of these issues, then why aren't we doing it?
A very good question. And as I said earlier, it's become all the more pressing in view of the increased emphasis on students' overall well-being. And it's of course, as Heidi pointed out just now, in a smaller class, it's that much easier for teachers to form positive relationships with their students, to try and reach out to students and get to know them better. Not to mention, of course, the marking load.
Yes,
marking load.
I know. All that, well, technology is coming in now. They say AI is helping to take off some of that burden. I think all these are tools that, you know, we evolve and adapt with over time. Heidi, you know, perhaps speaking for yourself now, you've left the profession. Is it because you're just tired of teaching, tired of all this?
Well, I would say MOE is definitely my first love, and it's truly a very nice environment because everyone, you know, is really like doing the best for the students, so that hasn't changed. But truth to be told, the point of consideration for myself then was, how sustainable is it for me to work like that till I retire?
Yeah.
I don't think I could.
Maybe you tell us, what would help teachers avoid a burnout? Speaking on behalf of not just yourself, for all the teachers, your teachers you know, your friends, what are some of the things that we could do to help?
I know that, like, you know, the X number of working hours, or in teaching, we say, like, okay, you need to fulfill, like, your full teaching load, which is, like, this X number of hours. But I think one thing that the ministry needs to understand is that 1 hour of teaching in the classroom is not the same as 1 hour sitting in the office. Like, you can't compare, like, 1 hour of teaching with, like, 1 hour of office work. So that's one thing. Because it takes a lot of energy. Mental stress, emotional energy to, you know, fully deliver a class. So that's one thing. So really to relook at, you know, the X number of full teaching load that you are talking about, is that necessary? Is there anywhere that we can reduce that?
Okay.
So that, you know, teachers can have more white space to really plan for their lessons during curriculum hours, and not because they have to bring it home after work. Their mind is still moving non-stop because they are thinking, okay, what am I going to do tomorrow? And of course, like, I still think that a smaller class size would definitely help. Yeah, not just, you know, because you can interact more deeply, but also because it's definitely easier for them to manage, like, a smaller class size, and you have, like, less incidents happening in class, which then you will have to spend less time, like, following up on those incidents as well.
So it's also preemptive. In other words, if you know the students are a bit need a bit more help in certain areas, you can reach out to them earlier than later.
Yes, correct. Yeah, so those would be like the two wish lists that I always had when I was a teacher. And of course, if budget can allow, please hire some teacher assistants. Yeah. And, you know, it's not like the allied educators that we have, which is to go into the classroom to support the teaching and learning. But it's really like what I experienced in the in the international school, teacher assistants that will help with like maybe the more administrative part of the teacher's workload. I think that would really help the teachers.
So Jason, I mean, you've heard from Heidi. One thing that you do is look at curriculum, and she's mentioned that we tend to want to do too much, it feels. What do you say to that?
I would reply by saying, by following up on what Heidi has just mentioned, what she's trying to tell us is that teaching is very emotionally taxing on teachers. So in other words, it's not just about the delivery of the content. There's a lot of emotional work that's going on, and very often it's invisible to the students and to the parents. But nevertheless, it's a very huge source of potential burnout, because there's only so much that a teacher can give of himself or herself.
Okay.
And of course, because this concept of care is so central to teaching now, it's, as Heidi pointed out earlier on, it's not always easy to say to yourself, I'm going to draw a firm line here. I'm not going to answer the call or the text message, especially if it's from your student.
Yeah.
Say the student calls you or texts you after hours saying that they've got a personal problem. They're feeling very down. Can you then say to yourself, okay, the time for caring is over?
Of course not.
See, yeah. So that's part of, the very real danger that teachers face.
But I want to ask you about the curriculum bit, because she did mention that that is one huge part of the workload. Are we trying to put too much on the plate, too much on the table, not just for teachers, but for our kids as well?
No one really is able to predict what the future holds with that much certainty. So in a way, if you're a policymaker, to some extent, you're pretty much working in the dark.
Okay.
And you're trying your best to predict future trends. And of course, you never quite know if you've got it right, because it takes that long to do your planning. And by the time you roll your new curriculum out, things might have changed yet again.
Sure. But I think some key parts remain. I mean, and you know, in terms of the way teachers are and the loads they have, that's quite clear from what we've shared today. Of course, to all of you who are parents, as you know, we all play a part of this. It's all our children. We care a lot, but at the same time, we have to be mindful. So how do we find that balance? So if you have thoughts on this issue, please drop us a note. We do love to hear from you. I'll just leave you with a thought, because I found this quote online that says that teachers, well, they don't just teach. They ignite minds, steady hearts, and shape the world one lesson at a time. So what do you think? What kind of parent do you want to be? What kind of teacher would you like to be if you had the chance? Do let us know your thoughts. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. This has been Deep Dive. Thanks for your company.